You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Six months, 82 games, and finally, the postseason is here. First up, the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament. For this, the rules are simple. Win to get in. Eight teams battle to earn their playoff spot in a win-or-go-home style tournament that is bound to be full of highlights, excitement, and drama. There's no better way to set the tone for the playoffs than this, so make sure you don't miss the action. Watch TNT's coverage of the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament on April 16th and 19th on TNT, True TV, and Max.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
I urge our listeners to check out the Strict Scrutiny podcast here, Leah Littman and Melissa Murray. They are both professors who are going to help us navigate some of this landscape of the last few days. We talked to Jemele Hill about this a little bit earlier. She is somehow completely unsurprised. I feel totally naive being surprised by what it is that has happened over the last day. Welcome, ladies. Thank you for helping us navigate some of this stuff. First off, Melissa, you start us off by just telling us the last 4 or 5 days have felt how to you?
So I think I'm in the Jemele Hill camp. This is completely unsurprising to me. The seeds for all of this have been being sown for years, but it really reached a fever pitch on November 8th of 2016 when this country decided that Hillary Clinton's emails were just too much for them and they elected Donald Trump to be president. And Donald Trump vowed to appoint to the Supreme Court justices who would overrule Roe versus Wade and would advance a conservative legal agenda. And he got three opportunities to do that, one through the stolen seat that Barack Obama by rights should have appointed a justice to, and then he had two by chance. And that basically set in motion this conservative 6-3 supermajority that has in the space of one term laid waste to 50 years worth of precedent. And that was just last week. This morning, Monday, they laid waste to a number of precedents dealing with religious liberty and the Establishment Clause and government speech. So, you know, this is a court that can flex its muscle in whatever ways it wants to because they have the numbers to do so. And I don't think they really care what we think.
Leah?
I'm also in the not surprised camp. I think while I'm not surprised, it has been deeply sad to read about the immediate consequences for so many people from Roe being overruled. Because once that happened, several states had trigger laws on the books that immediately went into effect, given that the court formally overruled Roe versus Wade. And then in other states, you know, states had been enacting restrictive abortion laws for the last 40 years, but basically all of those laws had been enjoined. They couldn't be enforced. But then after this decision, states were running off to the courthouses, asking the courts to let them enforce these laws. And so then we got stories about clinics having to cancel appointments and tell patients that actually they couldn't perform these procedures. They might have to travel, you know, 1,000 miles in order to obtain an abortion. And just reading the reactions was really a gut punch.
Melissa, how scared are you about what's happening in this country?
I mean, again, I'm not scared because I think I have seen this coming for a while. Like, none of this should be surprising. All of the seeds for this were laid. Like, we knew this was coming. what's scary to me is not that it's this happening, but that it seems like there's very little we can do to stop it, right? So, you know, the questions about what we can do about a court that's really out of control are pretty limited. And one of the things that's so interesting about this opinion is that the court says they're simply removing the question of abortion and sending it back to the states for democratic deliberation. But the court, through its own decisions, has effectively dismantled the infrastructure of democracy that would allow true democratic deliberation to actually happen. In 2013, the court dismantled a major portion of the Voting Rights Act, the preclearance provisions, which makes it easier for states to pass suppressive voter laws that make it harder for individuals to register their views at the ballot box. Just last term, Justice Alito, who wrote the majority opinion in this abortion case, wrote an opinion that essentially allowed states to limit the rights of minority voters to have their votes heard and registered at the ballot box. So all of this has been happening for a while, gerrymandering, suppressive voter laws. That's the thing that scares me, because traditionally, it's the democratic process that would be the way to respond to a court that is out of control.
Leah, do you think the protests are going to end up being powerless?
I think that the protests are not sufficient, right? This is a court that largely feels it is insulated from public opinion, in part because, you know, we have an electoral system that enables minority rule. You know, the Electoral College allows presidents to win the presidency even when they lose the popular vote because of the Senate. You can have a majority of senators confirm a justice even though they represent substantially fewer Americans, you know, than the senators that actually oppose the nomination. And so protests are important, but they are a first step to organizing and actually obtaining political power and reforming our democracy so that it is more responsive to individuals and the will of the voters. Like, this court and Republicans who are committed to minority rule are not just going to look around at the protests and say, yes, the fact that a majority of Americans, you know, oppose this agenda is enough for me to stop.
But do you believe that there is then an equal and opposite reaction to come from liberals? Because I have so far found that that hasn't really been the case. I don't think particularly Democratic politicians recognize that they are in the middle of a siege of power that has been happening over generations and have thus far proven unwilling to fight fire with fire in this regard.
I think that that's completely correct. You know, thus far, the Democrats have not understood what was happening right before their eyes with, you know, Mitch McConnell just running circles around them when it came to the federal courts and the Supreme Court. And they, you know, they knew this was coming. We saw a leaked draft of this majority opinion over a month ago. And still, it seems like the Democrats have not settled on a message about what exactly they are willing to promise voters they will do in the event that voters actually did allow them to retain control of the House and increase their majority in the Senate. And I think that is very much missing, you know, a lack of a plan or a lack of a clear communicated plan to voters, you know, from the Democratic Party, telling them what they would do in the event that they, you know, were able to retain power or actually increase it.
Melissa, is there anything recently that compares to how invasive and under attack a woman can feel based on law this way?
This is pretty bad, and I don't know that it has any other recent analog. It's been the course in our history that the court, if it does speak to the question of rights, it's to expand rights. So, for example, in 2015, the Obergefell decision expanded civil marriage to include same-sex couples. The idea that the court would take a right that previously had been conferred and then withdraw it, like, that seems wholly unprecedented. Certainly, we've never seen anything like that in our lifetime. And, you know, for the court to do that while comparing what they're doing to Brown versus Board of Education overruling Plessy versus Ferguson is particularly rich, maybe even a little ghoulish. You know, they're presenting these as though they're analogs when I think they hit a little differently for the people who will directly feel their effects.
Leah, you were shaking your head at something she was saying there.
Yeah, I mean, the court said in overruling Roe, we, the Supreme Court today, are acting the same way the Supreme Court acted in 1954 in Brown versus Board of Education when it overruled Plessy and said states could no longer operate segregated public schools. But that's just ridiculous. I mean, what Brown did is it welcomed a group of people who had been historically excluded and subordinated within American society, within American government, and said, no, right, they are equal citizens. That is what Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey did. It recognized that women are equal citizens. Their rights should not be determined with reference to the 1860s when they couldn't vote and were treated as second-class citizens. And yet that is what the Supreme Court today is insisting on doing.
Melissa, I heard kind of conflicting thoughts about whether or not this will portend on future decisions that the court might take up. Clarence Thomas referenced something in taking up some other recent precedents, including the legalization of gay marriage. But it's not exactly certain whether that's an opinion that's shared by the rest of the court. What for you do you think this decision portends with other precedents that have been established recently using due process as the main basis for the justification?
Well, I'll say the one silver lining of this entire suite of opinions laying waste to 50 years of precedent was that Justice Thomas said the quiet part out loud. And he said that he thought the court should go further and reconsider Obergefell versus Hodges, the decision that legalized same-sex marriage, Lawrence versus Texas, the 2003 decision that allowed for same-sex sexuality, and 1965's Griswold versus Connecticut, which permits a right to contraception. The majority opinion by Justice Alito went to great lengths to insist that just because they were overruling abortion on the grounds that the abortion right was unmoored from constitutional text and not deeply rooted in the traditions and history of this country, that logic did not extend to these other rights, the right to contraception, the right to same-sex marriage, the right to same-sex sexuality. But that is absolute gaslighting. All of those rights, including the right to abortion, are underlaid by this guarantee of liberty from the 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause. And if Roe is constitutionally suspect, then Obergefell, Griswold, and Lawrence are similarly suspect. And Justice Thomas essentially said, yes, the court's unwilling to do that today, but I think we should go further. And you're right, he didn't get any other takers for his majority opinion, but I don't know that it's necessarily intended for his colleagues. That opinion is intended for an audience outside of the court and in the lower federal courts where Justice Thomas has his acolytes, his former clerks who are now current judges on those lower federal courts, who will steward and husband these ideas in a series of lower court decisions so that when it again percolates up to the Supreme Court, they will be packaged and perfected, and those ideas will find a willing and receptive audience with five justices of the court. It is only a matter of time. It is a near certainty that abortion will not be the end. It is just the beginning, and these other rights are similarly in danger.
Leah, what can we do with accuracy about projecting what the next 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 years are going to look like in this realm if we are powerless to stop it with protests?
I think if you want to know where the court is going, you should probably do three things. One would be to watch Fox News. You know, it's frankly very clear that this majority of justices is heavily influenced by where the modern Republican Party is. Second, I would read the Republican Party platform. You know, as Melissa noted, the Republicans promised to appoint justices who would overrule Roe. They also promised to appoint justices who would undo Obergefell versus Hodges, the right to marriage equality. And, you know, third and finally, if you, again, want to peek under the curtain, I would follow along either looking to see what conservative commentators, conservative legal commentators are advocating, or follow podcasts or writers who do. You know, they will clue you in on where the conservative legal movement might be going next.
But best guess, though, on whether we just overturned 50 years of law and are going to get stuck with blank number of years of this is the new normal.
We're living with this for a while. I mean, this is a court stacked with people who are 50 and apparently they do CrossFit. They're going to be around for a while. We've had a few additions to the court. Justice Jackson was appointed and confirmed just this year, but that doesn't really change the numbers game here. It's still a 6-3 conservative supermajority, and it will be for the foreseeable future unless we see some serious action, either because Congress remains in the hands of the Democrats and their majority in the Senate widens, and if there is a Democratic president who can continue to appoint justices, there are a lot of proposals to think about limiting the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court on certain issues, and perhaps even limiting the terms that justices of the Supreme Court serve so that each appointment isn't so fraught and freighted when they become available, and presidents will have an opportunity to appoint at least one or two justices during their terms. But we're going to live with this for the long term, and that's always been the plan. The conservatives knew and have always known that the court is a minoritarian institution, and it's a minoritarian institution where the justices are appointed for life. And you can get through the court things that you cannot get done in majoritarian politics. When Donald Trump tried to repeal the ACA and John McCain voted thumbs down, the first thing the conservative legal movement did was file a lawsuit in a district court in Texas to challenge that so that it could be undone through judicial fiat, not through the democratic process. It is a way to thwart domestic agendas using courts, not using Congress.
A woman is pregnant with a baby, Leah, that she wants to abort. What's that going to look like in the next 6 months and the next 6 years and 16 years for people in that position?
It will look very different depending on where she lives. You know, in blue states, they are doing things to secure access to abortion. In other states, however, she might have extremely limited options. She might be living in a state that even prohibits doctors from informing her how to or where to obtain an abortion. So for some people, it will continue to be easy. For others, it is going to involve a considerable amount of research, as well as expending time and resources to leave the state, possibly multiple times, in order to obtain that kind of care. And if and when Republicans win control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, it could very well mean women in the United States have to leave the country in order to obtain, you know, legal abortions.
To add on to what Leah is saying, when she does carry that pregnancy to term, in most of the states that are inhospitable to abortion, they're also inhospitable to paid family leave, to subsidies for childcare, to Medicaid expansion for those women who are not able to have private health insurance. So the picture looks bleak across the board. And pro-life seems to be pro-life for only part of the life. The rest of the life seems to be unattended to.
Melissa, what do you say to the religious person who says we must protect the most vulnerable, the fetus must be protected? The response is what to that?
I mean, I grew up in Florida. I grew up around individuals who are religious. I grew up attending church. I understand this argument, and I think it's a powerful one for people of faith, like this idea that abortion is tantamount to murder. I mean, I understand where it's coming from. But again, I come back to, if you're going to be pro-life for the whole life, right? You can't be pro-life and oppose abortion, but be in favor of state violence against Black people. You can't be pro-life and be against abortion, but be in favor of the death penalty. You can't be pro-life and be against all of the public subsidies that people are calling for to help them live a better and more healthful life. Just marginal things like the expansion of Medicaid, the opportunity to stay at home in the first couple of months that your baby is born. I mean, these are not radical socialist programs. These are basic things that other advanced democracies have that we do not. And I just don't think that you can consign an individual to carry a pregnancy to term without also considering these other aspects of what that looks like for that person during the course of her life and then the child's life.
For those who do not know, Leah, what would you like them to know about the Strict Scrutiny podcast? It's about the United States Supreme Court, the legal culture that surrounds it, but what else do they need to be knowing?
You know, we try our best to explain the impact that the court's decisions have on people's lives, and also to explain the reasoning that the court used to get there, you know, to both lawyers as well as non-lawyers. And I think given the amount of changes that the court has made just in the last year, we are trying to get people up to speed with where the court might go next.
Appreciate the insight, ladies. Thank you for being on with us.
Thanks for having us.
6 months, 82 games, and finally, the postseason is here. First up, the SoFi NBA play-in tournament. For this, the rules are simple. Win to get in. 8 teams battle to earn their playoff spot in a win-or-go-home style tournament that is bound to be full of highlights, excitement, and drama. There's no better way to set the tone for the playoffs than this, so make sure you don't miss the action. Watch TNT's coverage of the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament on April 16th and 19th on TNT, True TV, and Max.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Don Levitard.
If I'm at the house with them and they're all rooting, I could just be like, yeah, rah, rah, rah. Go Yankees.
Stugats.
Do you know how unsettling it would be if I attended a live sporting event and someone behind me was just going, rah, 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 Browns, rah, Heat, rah, rah, rah.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugats.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Sit back, watch the world burn, pick up all the pieces, be grilling brats while checking shams.
Ha ha! I'm gambling again!
I'm gambling again! I'm gambling again!
I'm gambling again!
I'm gambling again!
I want to see all the takes. I'm gambling again!
I'm gambling again.
His eyes are
gambling
I'm gambling again!
I'm gambling again!
She's got a great ass!
It's all the different Pacinos.
Eddie Barzoon!
Kyrie Irving.
Vanity!
According to reports now that are credible, and Amin, you, evidently I'm the only idiot around here who gets surprised by things that are obvious. Christian Winfield, a Nets and NBA reporter for the New York Daily News, says that according to sources, Kyrie Irving has requested and received permission from the Nets to sign and trade offers from other teams. Kevin Durant still hasn't spoken to the Nets front office. Russell Westbrook to Brooklyn remains unlikely. What are you laughing about, Mike? You're just laughing at yourself? You're laughing at Al Pacino? Or are you just laughing at the world burning?
Yeah, you know that scene in Dumb and Dumber when Lloyd is riding the moped after he just like nuked Harry's insides with a bunch of laxative? And he's just got that sinister laugh. That's what I've got
You're happy that the whole Brooklyn experiment, there's no going back from this, right? This is not posturing anymore, right? I mean, this is not leveraging in order to get more money from Brooklyn. It's over?
This is 100% posturing. So this is the game of chicken, Dan. It's the, maybe I'll go talk to other people. All right, go ahead. Maybe I want permission to seek sign and trades. All right, here's your permission. Maybe I might find me an offer out there, okay? And they just keep going until someone says, okay, I didn't mean it. Like, all right, let's get back and talk about this, right? But in order for a threat to be credible, you kind of have to carry out the steps as if you're going to do it.
How do the Nets play this? Given what we know about Kevin Durant, it kind of seems like he's certainly not putting their minds at ease with how he's playing this. So do you give Kyrie this permission to seek a sign and trade? If you've already internally made a decision on what you'd accept for Kevin Durant, or do you just keep the things totally separate and hope to mend fences?
You hope to make a deal that makes sense for both sides, right? You hope you can go back to Durant and say he didn't want to stay. We didn't feel comfortable committing to him, and I think Durant's a lot more logical and understanding than people give him credit for. As far as look. The guy is unreliable. You've seen it in terms of day-to-day, whether he's going to be here or not. So we went...
Are you talking about Ben Simmons?
Ouch. So we went out and got this for him. And the this has to be something that they feel like we can go back to Durant and he can feel comfortable and confident. This keeps us in championship contention.
But what do you think is going to happen here? You're saying it's 100% posturing. But it feels to me that if you're going to make this kind of mess, this isn't just posturing. It's not just leaking to get your maximum contract. It's not
only that, it seems like it would be more possible than it has been at any point in the last 2 years that this deteriorates there very quickly, much more quickly than they thought it would.
I got to tip my hat to the Brooklyn Nets. They somehow became the cautionary tale of the decade twice in trying to chase a championship and giving up all your draft capital. Because I imagine there's some voices within that front office that say, well, if Durant is entertaining leaving, Houston's got all our picks. Rebuild starts now.
I mean, what do you do if you're the Nets, though? Because, yeah, okay, unreliable. But as soon as you get rid of these two guys and Kyrie at less value than he's had at any point since being Kyrie, what do you do? It's your organization that's at stake. You can't just immediately become irrelevant when you've handed your franchise over to these two guys for 2 years.
I think for a couple of things. One, that's a funny point by Mike, but more specifically, I think they've become a cautionary tale of, well, the players are what makes everything go around. We should just let the players do everything. This is why you have front offices. This is why you have structure. I'm not saying that, hey, I'm not doing the Jerry Krause organizations win championships. I'm telling you, you have to have some sort of leadership and vision that people buy into. Otherwise, you get people who are acting on whims. And that's what happened with the Nets organization.
You say that, and I know you're a Steve Nash guy, but they went to a GM that didn't really have that role, had experience in that role, being the guy, making all the decisions. And they brought in a head coach that didn't have experience being in that role. It kind of seems like this was destined.
Hold on.
To happen.
No. But Sean Marks was. Look at what the Nets had accomplished up until the point that every team builds towards. I want to get to a place where I have good young talent, I'm competitive, I'm winning, and I have cap space to go after transformational type players. They executed their plan perfectly. And there's a universe where Dr. Strange comes in and says, hey, Nets, Kevin Durant, Kyrie maybe later, or some other thing, or maybe not yet. Just like do something else there. That could have happened, but it didn't, right? It didn't, and they ceded control in that. But to go back to what Dan's question is.
What do you do?
What do you do? You got to have 8 billion scenarios on the board, right? This is where you go full Doctor Strange, where we got to have all the different.
Did you just watch Doctor Strange?
Twice he's done the Doctor Strange, full Doctor Strange. I did not think that we would be talking about Kyrie Irving and somebody else would be strange.
Billions of probabilities and there's only one that it'll work?
Give him the laugh, man. That was a good one.
He wasn't even listening.
I was just waiting for my next turn to talk.
Trust me.
But to your point, though, Mike, about hiring Steve Nash, did that not seem like a collaborative effort that's who Kevin Durant wanted to coach the team? And that's who Kyrie Irving wanted to coach the
Certainly
team?
Certainly not. No. Remember what Kyrie said after the hiring of Steve Nash. We don't really see him as a head coach.
He also said that to the owner and the GM before this all began. It was we together are going to get together and build this
and
team.
This is where
Kyrie
we end
doesn't
up with
think he has bosses.
And we were all just saying, whoa, this is not gonna work out. And we were right. Credit to us again.
Again, credit to you guys.
Yeah, credit to us. Yeah,
we get a lot
us.
Of stuff wrong.
Great job, us.
So it feels good when
but
you're
next
but to me,
year.
But Dan, to answer your question, like the way that Brooklyn salvages this, they get a shed load for Kevin Durant, no? Like you don't think
a
that...
A load from a shed?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Showed.
Wow. Hell yeah. That's a little too close. Yeah. A little close to the line.
Well, it works.
The Nets will be what next year?
It depends. What Chris is doing is he's making the assumption that if Kyrie's out the door, Durant's out the door. But that's not necessarily the case. There is a universe where you get enough of a return on Kyrie. Maybe not what market value should have been for a guy of his caliber, but good enough players in return. Where Kevin Durant says, okay, we got this. We've got Joe Harris and Ben Simmons, who didn't play last year, coming back. We've got Seth Curry. We can bring back Andre Drummond on another minimum. We got ourselves a little squad here.
What's the package?
I don't know.
If you're doing sign and trade and the reports are that he doesn't have much value out there, is it something like, here's a scenario that I think makes most sense. Dallas. Because they have to figure out what to do with Brunson. He's going to get his bag. I think Kyrie's an upgrade over Brunson. I like Brunson, but Kyrie's an upgrade over him.
That's an excellent example. If you go to Kevin Durant and say, look, Kyrie's out of here, but I went and got you Brunson and Reggie Bullock, which we would say, Because conventional wisdom, we think about it as like one star will get you a bunch of good players, but you'd rather have the star than the good players. But in the case of the Nets, they got a star. They've got perhaps the best player in the league. So a bunch of really good players surrounding him makes them deeper, makes them better. And you look at, and Durant looks at Brunson and says, he's young. He's very effective. He does some of the things that Kyrie does, not to the extent of Kyrie, but over 80 games versus maybe 40, right? And not have to deal with all those things. Oh, and by the way, we get a guy like Bullock on the wing who can defend and shoot threes.
He started a game 0 for 10.
Is Tyler Hero a guy like that would be in that kind of
Tyler Hero and
yeah, but you can't do that for Kyrie because Tyler Hero is a part of your. You got to sit this Kyrie Irving thing out unless you get word that KD's saying put that you don't have a shot at KD. Then it's a difficult position that Miami is in because it's a clear and obvious upgrade over Kyle Lowry, Kyrie Irving, and all that he entails. I still do it, but to do it nukes your chances at Kevin Durant.
I think. It's not even that. I just don't think the way the Miami Heat conduct business is compatible with Kyrie Irving. Even if he's ready to play 82 games.
Hear, hear.
But isn't the point of the culture that you get people in and you fix them?
Hear, hear.
There are some people.
Why are we in the British House of Commons? Who are you? Why are you a person out of Parliament?
Hoorah.
Like, what do you, I don't understand what you're doing.
Well said.
Hear, hear? Like, how old is a person who gives confirmation with hear, hear?
I just want to support.
You're so happy. You're just happy that the Nets are falling apart. You're crazed. You're crazed and thrilled that this whole
Jolly
Nets experience has turned into an unmitigated disaster.
I've been fascinated by all the thought exercises as it relates to Durant because it involves trading all of your young, like a really good young player for a guy off an Achilles in year 16 of his career. And do you just go, all right, I'm cashing in Zion. Do you cash in Zion for Durant? Do you cash in Scotty Barnes for Durant? In the Heat's cases, do you cash in Bam Adebayo for Durant?
Who?
Adris Adebayo, excuse me. Do you cash in Adris Adebayo for Durant? And you have to ask if the question is like, do you want 10 more years of Bam?
I mean,
do
you're
you
down
want
on Bam.
Kevin Durant now?
You're down on Bam.
I'm down on who?
Adris.
Oh, Adris Adebayo, yeah. I'm not down on him, but I think Durant is transformational enough. Look, at the end of the day, Woody, you are verbalizing the eternal question, which is, does a championship make worth a decade of like nothing after? Would you rather have that or would you rather be really good for a decade but maybe not get that championship? Now, obviously, you can't guarantee a championship, but Kevin Durant, what we've seen of him post-Achilles, is really, really good.
You've been trading 10 years of Adebayo for 3 years of Durant.
Might I introduce the circumstantial evidence of a video where Kevin Durant was at Team USA workouts and he said Bam Adebayo impressed him more than anybody else?
Who impressed him?
Adris Adebayo impressed
yes,
more than
but
anybody.
Also Jimmy Butler says he'd rather play with Kyrie Irving than anyone in the league. What does that stuff mean?
Well, it was also a very long time ago.
Mike, how else are you getting Durant without giving them Bam? Like, if you're Brooklyn, you hang up the phone
without giving them
if the Heat don't give him Adris.
Okay. Well, Tyler Hero's your chip. You obviously need to make the salaries work. And I don't know I imagine the offers for Kevin Durant would suggest that you would have to part with a talent like Bam.
They're not doing again what they did in 2010 where they went with a bunch of centers who had frying pans for hands.
So
and
we go Tyler, Kyle Lowry,
they're not doing
James Posey,
they're not going to do two or three Mac.
that's a package. Take it or leave it.
They're going to do did I ever tell, there was a funny story, I don't think I've told you this, about how it is that Eddie House ended up on that team because the last cut came down to Eddie House and Patrick Beverley and it was otherwise even, but Patrick Beverley wouldn't shut up trash talking LeBron and they had to keep pulling. Patrick Beverley was a rookie and they had to keep like, hey, if you're going to trash talk him, would you please be less insulting? And finally, whether it's LeBron or others, they're like, get out of here, Patrick. We're just going to go with Eddie House. It's too much.
Did you guys see the rookie the Pacers drafted, Benedict Cumberbatch? He said,
another Doctor Strange?
Yeah.
Again with this?
I'm like your a dog with a bone with this.
Doctor Strange reference.
But he said something along the lines of, like, LeBron's got to prove to me that he's better than me. And I'm just like, I get it. Like, we're confident athletes. We've got to prove we're not afraid of anybody. But you don't have to say dumb shit in that task.
A lot is going to happen over the next few days. And I'm excited that it seems as though Miami has a ticket to the show. And we'll try their best to get in the game. And you know that this front office will act in an aggressive fashion. Can I ask you guys to make a prediction? A week from now, while we're grilling our sausages, hubba hubba, are we scrolling our phones with the anticipation that Kevin Durant might be coming here?
He's the betting favorite. Or Miami is the betting favorite for if Kevin Durant decides to leave Brooklyn. Wow. Miami is 5-2 to be the team that gets him. And that makes sense from a Kevin Durant would pick his own destination standpoint. The Heat certainly have enough. I'll be curious how much draft capital they're willing to part with. But if this all blows up, I really do think the Heat are there to pick up the pieces.
I don't think the reasons that Mike is giving are the reasons. They have gotten up organizationally from having Deion Waiters and Hassan Whiteside. I can't believe that. What are you laughing about, Whittingham?
Look on Mike's face. Yes. He has his Jack Palance look again.
The Gabriel Cash.
The thing that works in Miami's favor on Durant is the story I've told you guys before, that he did come down here and the meetings on recruiting before he chose Golden State were exceptional. And one of the things that he bought in on most was the Heat telling him the game is made too hard for you in Oklahoma City. We will get you shooters. We will spread it out. We will make you're the best player in the league, but the way you get your shots is too difficult with Westbrook. We will make that easier. And he's like, great idea. I'm going to Golden State.
You convinced me.
God damn it.
Do that thing he talked about.
But instead of Mario Chalmers, do it with Steph Curry. Boiled. My whole take on this Brooklyn situation as Miami, if I can make another movie analogy, is that scene in The Wedding Singer.
Oh, for
where
love
John
of
Lovitz
God.
Goes, he's losing his mind, and I'm reaping all the benefits.
Happy and crazed Mike is. The look on his face.
Don't let us in the building again.
You understand that Roy drove without a hotel room just to hate in Tampa. And Mike Ryan is just watching what's happening with Brooklyn. Suddenly they're more interesting than they've ever been because it looks closer than ever to coming apart.
I'm the little girl looking into the camera as the house or playground burns behind her. I am loving this. This is great. God, I hope he doesn't go to a good team.
It's staggering that Kevin Durant is available. Like, that it's even a possibility. I know, I mean what you're saying. Like, but they seem like they're a package deal. Like, I really do think that if Kyrie Irving comes unstuck from Brooklyn and he goes, that was the whole point of him going there, was to change the paradigm in Brooklyn. And they haven't changed the paradigm at all, it would appear.
They did change it. They changed it to a place where we all look at it and say, oh, that's why we don't do it that way. That they did change it. They proved why you don't do it that way.
They weren't the first. But, I mean, Ben Simmons and James Harden did it before.
No. We're not talking about like forcing our way out or whatever. I'm talking about the organization wholly. Everyone says, oh, LeBron runs the Cavs. No, this is what it looks like when they actually run everything. When it's just haphazard and all
but
over the place.
What do you think's going to happen?
But hold on, let me just address something that Woody said. Like, if Durant felt that way, wouldn't he come out front and center and say, under no circumstances can we lose Kyrie Irving? Why do you think he's playing it coy?
He's doing the ghosting thing. He's doing the LeBron thing. I don't want this blood on my hands.
It's not
straight out of the LeBron playbook.
It's not the blood on the hands. It's the opportunity to sit back and see what the outcome is when the dust settles and say, oh, kind of like that one better. All right. As opposed to going out there, supporting Kyrie very vocally and say, oh, we need him back. We absolutely need him back. And then, like, nothing happens or they end up getting better. And now you got to look like the guy say, oh, Kyrie, sorry, but not sorry.
You said it's 100% posturing. That means you see a scenario where Kyrie ends up back with the Nets.
Yes. I'm not saying 100% posturing because part of the posturing.
You did say 100%
you
posturing.
You asked me if it's posturing. I said, yes, I absolutely believe it's posturing. But part of posturing is sometimes you got to carry it out. Like, he doesn't want to leave Brooklyn. But at some point, in order to have your word preserved and your value preserved, if he believes in a certain number as being his value, you have to go through with the threat, even though you didn't want to do that. And the other part of this to remember, and this is important, is that Kyrie is not represented by a super agent. He's represented by his stepmom. And so there's an element to all of this posturing, leaking of stuff, that is very, very my first leverage negotiation. How do I know that? Because they named six teams, right? The Lakers, the Clippers, the Heat, the Celtics.
No, the Knicks, the Mavs, and the Sixers.
Knicks, Mavs, and Sixers, right? Celtics were on the list, too.
They weren't among the six. Maybe they.
Well, okay. Then Celtics.
Kyrie Irving back
Kyrie
to the Celtics?
Thinks he could, that would be great.
They threw out names of places. Think about Sixers. In what universe?
Yeah, he wants to go back with Harden.
In what universe? Like, it's just saying, ooh, what are teams that Brooklyn wouldn't want us to be on? That's all it is. Ah. They picked teams that they felt like Brooklyn would not want that to. Oh, I don't want to see them in division. I don't want to see them across the East River. But the reality is, of those options, like the Knicks and the Lakers seem the most desperate. Clippers less so, a little bit there. But then none of those places really have options to say, what's the Sixers going to send them back?
James Harden.
Right. Like, it's just, it doesn't make sense. And so there's a level of lack of sophistication to this trade demand that tells me, oh, they're just trying to feel wanted. They're just trying to say, oh, you won't go out with me? Oh, well, I don't know. Philly's been calling me and they look hot. Like, that's all they're doing.
There isn't a scenario here where Miami doesn't come out smelling like roses. I'm loving all of this. Oh.
I mean, if Kevin Durant goes somewhere else in the East, that could be a problem.
That'd be bad depending on the team.
Yeah.
But then I'll talk myself into Gordon Hayward again.
And look, I'm a quote my guy Perk. It's like, if Durant's going to leave, is there a team in the East that can offer a better package than the Celtics? Right? Like, if he's going to leave, like, hey, and this is an opportunity to win and play for a guy that you know, because Ime was an assistant coach in Brooklyn, and a team that just went to the finals. I mean, I guess Durant might feel, again, it's one of those, here we go again.
At least they lost this time. That helps.
Well, and they'd have to trade the pieces so that he wouldn't be joining everybody that they already have over there.
Well, the idea is one of those guys, right, would have to go. But whoever's left is still a damn sure better.
Oh, his is going to be a giant package, though. Durant, you're not going to be able to get Durant cheap.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.